Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and well, why isn't it a beer?
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle by Haruki Murakami, and someone's starting with a beer.
I'm starting with a beer, because right in the beginning, Kumiko, who is the main character's wife, yells at him to look for their lost cat and his cattails by Finn Beck. So this is Cattails by Finn Beck. Also, the cattail ends up being at least mentioned. The cat's tail ends up being mentioned later in the book.
Mm. How are you spelling tail, Nate?
T-A-I-L.
This is also a cattail L-E.
Sort of.
I don't know that it's not.
It's kind of got a little bit of everything.
Yep, it's a beer. It's good.
Made with real cattails?
It just says double IPA.
Mm, that's a lot of cattails.
Mm-hmm.
But when they make it, the guys have to like paw the pops into the container and they're like...
just like swat like it off of a table into it.
Yeah, like balls of yarn. They have them all lined up and then guys just pat them in.
You know, and they have to point a little laser pointer at it, so they just keep knocking it off.
Yeah, otherwise they just lay down in a sunbeam.
It's very hard to make.
So this book, Jimmy, you made us read this.
I did.
And what is it? What is this book?
This is a book about stuff. It's about a lot of stuff. I chose this one because we already read the other two Murakami books that I remember, so I picked this one. I read it a long time ago. It's been a while. I'd forgotten. I knew it was weird. I forgot how weird it was. But it's Murakami, so like you expect that.
I found it actually less weird than Kafka on the Shore.
In some ways, yes. But it's still like you're still at some points like, what the fuck?
You still don't know what's happening. Although you somewhat do know what's happening, you just have no idea where it's going or how it could possibly get resolved.
Yes.
So, Jimmy, since you picked it, why don't you tell us what happens in this book?
Oh, my God. If you pick a thing that exists, it happens in this book almost. But largely, it's based around a man named Toru Okada, whose cat disappears, and he's got to go find it. And in doing so, he ends up going on a bunch of supernatural adventures, as you do, because cats really just are hard to find sometimes. He should have just like rustled a bag of food. It would have come back running. But he did not do that because he has to go on a journey of self-acceptance and grief to truly understand where his cat went. So he lives in, I don't know, Japan somewhere. And this takes place in the 80s, so there's no phones, which would make a lot of the plot easier because people keep losing.
They have telephones, Jimmy.
They don't have mobile phones.
They have landlines.
Because you call someone's house, like, I couldn't find you. I guess you're dead. All right. So he has to go find this cat.
Right in the first chapter, he's at home. His wife is at work because he's unemployed. His wife's at work. He gets a phone call and a woman just says, give me 10 minutes.
Also, he's making spaghetti for breakfast, so you know where he's at.
Yeah, really hungover. And so, but the woman literally wants phone sex. This is like the middle of the day, or it's like 10 a.m. or something like that. And this is chapter one.
Yeah, you got to start off strong. You know, it's a 600-page book, so you really got to grab their attention right away.
He's like, what are you wearing?
He's like, I'm trying to eat my breakfast spaghetti, so I can't have phone sex right now. You're a stranger. I don't know you.
I'm going to guess kimono.
Yeah, maybe. I think he just wears. They say every time what he is wearing. It's always a t-shirt and cotton pants.
But like t-shirts of like random bands and shit too. Like, am I supposed to remember?
He is
that?
A 30-year-old unemployed guy eating spaghetti for breakfast. So that is I expect him to wear that.
Spaghetti for breakfast is definitely a beer by Other Half. I just didn't get it for today. It has to be another.
That's
half.
Probably like a what's the one with the sketched mice.
Oh, off color.
Off color, yeah. That's definitely an off color beer.
So his wife, yeah. Kumiko?
I don't know. Kumiko. You should know better than we would how to pronounce that.
I thought it was Kumiko, but I, you know,
it probably they always put the stress on the syllables you wouldn't expect, so it probably is Kumiko.
But she's taking care of him, and in a very like demure, like, no, I don't want to pressure you, but like, you need to get a fucking job, dude. Get your life together. And he's like, I don't know what I want to do. I was like a paralegal, but this spaghetti breakfast thing is really doing it for me right now. And so that's like part of the plot, is their marriage dissolving. Yeah. Starting with quite literally the pussy running away.
Foreshadowing.
But it's a metaphor.
But her pussy is named after her brother. More foreshadowing. Ew. He then starts wandering around looking. And I can't remember if he meets the weird goth girl first or the psychic lady first.
He meets May first.
Who is a girl. Like it was. I was trying to understand the logistics of their block.
The way it is, basically, like there's a bunch of houses back to back on their block. And in between the houses in the back is an alleyway. But at some point in the past, someone had bricked up both entrances, so you can't actually get between them like you would normally alleyway. So it's kind of like a dead space in between all the houses. And he has to like hop over the walls to get into the alley to go look for his cat and to look in the other yards. And at the end of the block is an abandoned house, which is a rear abutting May's house, kind of.
And it has a well, which will come up later.
It does have a well.
And Kumiko had told Toru that, oh, you should check that abandoned house. That's where all the cats are. That's where all the stray cats are. So you should go check. So that's, he's just hanging out down there. And then May, the teenage girl, is like, hey, mister, why don't you just come over here and hang out with me? And she is weird. She is very
weird. She's like a limp or something wrong with
her.
Yeah,
she's been, looks like she's been beat up. But she said she just fell off a motorcycle. Which you find out later. Yeah, which would do it for sure. Which is, you find out later that, much later in the book, that she has a kind of a death wish. And so she was putting her hand, so her boyfriend was driving the motorcycle, and she would put her hands over his eyes, and then they crashed and he died.
Yes.
And so she's still recovering from this motorcycle accident. And so, yeah, she's weird.
Well, at this point, she is weird because she is. Because she killed her boyfriend, and that's fucking with her. She was probably a little weird before that, too, though. But at this point in her life, she is a deeply damaged girl.
And she talks to the guy who's twice her age, who's unemployed.
Well, she's staying home from school because she's injured, but she is faking the injury because she just didn't want to go back to school.
Now she wants to work for the wig makers?
Yes. She's got a part-time job.
Steinhardt
counting
Wig Company or whatever it's called?
Yeah, it's the Steinhardt Wig Company. Wig Corporation. But she has a part-time job counting the number of bald people in the streets, or balding people.
Well, classifying, there's a different levels of bald.
Yes. So she can, you know, predict the amount of wigs needed.
Someone has to do that research. That is...
It's and a, she made it's a living. Good point in this was like, once you have a wig, you have to have it forever because you can't just show up to one day and have no hair. So you get, you know, guaranteed repeat customers.
I thought that was actually that was really funny. I never really put much thought into wigs.
You have to like buy wigs of like increasingly thinning hair so you can stop buying them eventually.
Yeah, it's like weaning off of like steroids or something. you have to cut the dough.
You just need a taste.
Or what if you just, you know, mount it further and further back?
I'm getting
over
a mullet.
Course of a couple months.
Yeah, they do the Giuliani move where your hairline is all of a sudden in the middle of the top of your head.
Yeah, you know, it happens. It leapt.
And then you have to sell all your stuff for a poll worker you besmirched. That's all happening. And Kumiko at some point is like, hey, Toru, there's a, someone's going to give you a call who is going to help find the cat, and you find out very soon, it's a psychic lady.
Yes.
Sure. And her name is
It's Miss Cleo.
Yeah, right? Cleo-san.
The cards, they tell all where the cat is.
Call me now. Make one find them for ye. Your accent
is just as genuine as hers was.
Yeah. I've been around people from the West Indies.
No, I mean, she was faking it.
I think she was faking a lot of things.
Yeah. No, she was real psychic, but she was fake West Indian. That's the weird part.
She's from Indiana. Very confusing.
West Indiana.
The westernmost Indies.
He's like, Muncie. The Irie. But Malta Cano is the... when you say that, that sounds like an Italian last name, actually. Malta Cano. She is this strange psychic lady who dresses oddly with her red Gilligan hat, her red vinyl hat.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know, this cat might come back. It's not clear. But did you, like, she tells him to wear a certain outfit or some shit. And he's like, where are your polka dot tie? And he's like, I can't find it. She's like, I know, you'll find it though. He's like, what is happening?
But not at home.
Yeah. Not in the way you know. And he's like, okay, thanks, I guess.
It's at the dry cleaners. Yeah, that's where it was.
Yeah. Crack that case wide open. He said, I don't even have the ticket. And if you're like, what is happening right now? That's how I felt.
Well, much like searching for a cat, you know, you just really have to try everything.
You can't just like jingle your keys for a few minutes.
No, they don't like keys.
Or, you know, you just have to act like you don't care and then the cat will come back. They understand hard to get. So this is all happening. And I can't remember what she says in the conversation.
So Malta Cano says, my sister, Krita, who's from lived in Crete or wants to go there, my sister, Krita, was violently raped by your wife's brother, by your brother-in-law. She's like, oh, what? Okay. And Toru was like, I've only talked to the guy like twice and I really don't like him. It's like, well, she's going to come over to your house and explain what happened.
He's an economist. Ew. She's like, oh, don't even talk about that. Really, he's like the Neil deGrasse Tyson of economics.
Yeah, basically like in her Japan. Family is, you know, one of the great, you know, fancy families of Japan and like they're aristocratic, basically, and like her uncle was in the Diet, which is, you know, very thinned out parliament.
You know, it's a very low carb parliament. Yeah, it's
I know rice is a lot of carbs. I don't know, but so her family is fancy, and this guy is now like this TV personality, like what's the word, like it. With like a famous intellectual.
Yeah, he's a public intellectual pundit.
He wrote like a book about economics that everyone was like, this is a completely new way of thinking about economics, which, much like the field of economics, was entirely made up to be whatever you want it to be. And
that invisible hand is real, Jimmy.
Yes.
You can't see it.
In this book.
Your commie eyes.
But she didn't like that, and we learn about her past, Kumiko, and it was like, you know, her brother was a creep as a child and was weird about him. And she lived with her grandmother for much of her childhood because her parents like sent her away for some reason that she can't remember. The sister died of food poisoning, but you, of course, know that it's not food poisoning. It's magic.
It's all that raw fish.
Yeah.
She was like the blowfish. It's bound to have raw eggs and raw fish. Cut the part out, right? So, again, these like little stories, which are interesting to read, they're just happening. And, and the brother, whose name is the same thing as a cat, is what? Noboru?
Or Noboru. And eventually...
Symbolism? Probably.
Yeah. The sister comes over, Krita Kano, and she's like, let me tell you about my life. She's like Malta's like assistant, now that she's an adult. She's like, I used to be in pain every day of my life all the time. Until I tried to kill myself, and then I felt nothing at all whatsoever. No pain, but nothing good either. Until this Noboru guy did something really, really fucked up to me.
Well, but first, I became a prostitute.
Yes, because she needed to pay back her brother for crashing his car when she tried to kill herself.
So she becomes a prostitute, and she's like, it was a great gig. It didn't bother me. But then... The like Yakuza fucking made me a slave to them. She was a slave prostitute.
But since she felt nothing, she's like, whatever, I'm still making crazy money.
And then one day her John is Noboru, and he does something strange.
And it bounces around. You get the rest of the story later, but it's impossible to tell what happened when. But basically, when Malta said that Krita was raped, it wasn't actually that. He did something mysterious and surreal to her. He put something in her, and he took something out, something weird. And from that point on, she felt a lot of stuff. And he, whatever he did was, basically she felt like her soul was defiled. And you're like, what happened? I don't understand. And you never will understand.
Till it happens to you.
Yeah.
Then, while this is happening, their friend, who has the very Japanese name of Mr. Honda.
Yeah, E. Honda.
E. Mitsubishi E. Honda.
Zero.
Godzilla dies.
Well, he was like the family family fortune teller that they had. And he was also deaf from the war, so he just shouted everything.
It wasn't me. No, we didn't ask. Pull my finger. No, so he says like weird Zen lessons to them occasionally when Toru and Kumiko are a younger married or newer married couple.
Part of the deal with her family was if they got married that they had to go see Mr. Honda for regular fortune tellings because her parents are very superstitious.
These are helpful somehow. I don't know.
He tells him be cautious about water, but mostly it's like, you know, do your thing. What here I wrote, I think I wrote it down because it didn't make any sense. You know, when you got to go up, go up. When you got to go down, go way down. When you can't do nothing, just wait. And I was like, oh, okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, he dies off page. And then a different old man, I forget his name.
Lieutenant Mamiya.
Lieutenant something. Yes. So he's like, I have a thing for you. It was left in his will. Or, you know, okay. And they meet. He's like, but first, let me tell you a 2-chapter-long story about World War II. And when that happened, I was like, okay, maybe this book is about World War II.
And Japan. It's like, oh, this is the story. Because so he was a young man in World War II. He meets clearly a very like hardened veteran named Yamamoto. And it's like, oh, this is going to be about the Yamamoto. No, it's not. It's literally a different guy. Yamamoto who planned the Pearl Harbor attack. Stuff like that. And who we killed during the war. But anyway, this is a totally different dude because this took place in 1937 on the border of Manchuria and Mongolia. And this whole thing about going across the border to Mongolia and they're like trying to sneak out and Yamamoto has some like message that needs to get back, but then they get captured by the Russians, and then Yamamoto, instead of giving up his like secret about where he hid the like message, the sadistic Russian dude skins him alive.
Mongolians do it.
He gets the Mongolians to do it.
Yeah, they're, you know, no one is surprised of the Mongolians doing acts of brutality in a war.
Everyone expects the Mongolian Inquisition.
Also, you find out after, they had been told by Yamamoto, no one can have this letter. It must be destroyed or hidden or, you know, shove it in your ass or something. And then they are camping out, and then all of a sudden they're surrounded, and they're like, Honda's missing, and the letter's missing. So he doesn't even have anything to, he can't give up anything, and he tries to be all tough.
And also, Honda is, at this point, known for his supernatural abilities of, you know, being able to tell the future or just know stuff. And he says to Mamiya, like, hey, by the way, you're going to die in Japan. Not here. So don't worry about that. And he's like, okay. Yeah.
He says it like right before. He's like, but you know, it's going to be weird, but you'll be fine.
Well, it's going to suck.
I guess that's good.
He gets his hand run over by a tank. He doesn't get run over by the tank except for his hand, but he loses his hand.
Well, this whole part here between the guy being flayed and the dude losing his hand and shit, it's like dismembers only.
Yeah.
This is a beer we've had before, I think. It is. It says it's not normal on the bottle, which is true for everything in this book.
Yeah.
It's just from Three Floyds, an imperial milk stout aged in bourbon barrels with cocoa nibs, cherries, and dried bananas.
It's called Dismembers Only.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
God, that's so goddamn good. Oh my God. I'm not going to remember anything after this. I found the passage of the guy being skinned alive really troubling. Rightfully so.
I think it's meant to be.
I was like, why is that here? I don't like this. It was horrifying. And then I looked it up. I was like, is that a thing that happened in World War II? And I was like, I'm afraid of what I'm going to find when I look up, like, skinned man alive. And I found a thing written by the translator of this book. His name is Jay Rubin. And he was like, I really hated that. Because, like, when you are the reader, you could just skim over the shit you don't like. But as the translator, you have to, like, wrestle with it. You have to, like, what is he trying to say here?
What's the right verb here?
How do I make sure I preserve him? It's like, you can't. You have to read everything. It was really, and then he said, he asked Murakami about that passage. He's like, what the fuck, man? And Murakami's like, I don't want to talk about it. God damn it. But it was really upsetting because it goes into excruciating detail about this, you know, horrible, torturous end of this man's life. For what? I don't know. But once that happened, I was like, this must mean something because this was a long chapter. Or two chapters, actually. Like, they get to the end of a chapter, and the guy's like, I should stop telling my story. He's like, no, keep going. He's like, okay, chapter two.
I'll tell you on my way to the bus.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I really got to catch this bus, so we're going to take this on the road.
Did those passages appear in, like, a short story collection or something like that?
This whole book is based on a short story that he wrote earlier, but I don't know how much of it.
Can we have just read that? Not short anymore. Why couldn't we read just the short story?
I don't know which part it was.
But once that happened, I was very sensitive reading the rest of the book, and there was a lot of stuff about people's skin and people having, like, you know, not their skin, like, all sorts of different passages where it talks about, we hardly know what's underneath the skin. I was like, hey, is that coincidence? I don't fucking know in this book, honestly. But that was, like, the climax of the book for me. It's like, it's all downhill from here. That was like, everything else is not going to be as interesting as that. This is still book one, The Thieving Magpie, by the way.
He's also got to find out about this abandoned house. So he's like, what's up with this house? He asks his uncle, because they are renting their house from his uncle. Has Kumiko already disappeared? I don't even remember.
Not yet, but soon. No. Somewhere.
So he goes, ask the realtor about the abandoned house, because he's worked here forever. He knows all about it. And he's like, everyone that lived there hanged themselves or drowned themselves. It's a bad place. And they're like, oh, well, don't go there then. But of course, he's going to go there eventually.
He's going to try to buy it.
Yeah. But he's got to, first, he's got to learn all about his wife's past, where she found one day Noboru as a teen smelling her dead sister's underwear or some weird shit like that. And she's like, that's not good. Don't like that. And then Kumiko disappears. She just doesn't come home from work one night. And he's like, oh, that's weird. She comes home every night. That's what people do. But she doesn't. And he has no fucking idea what happened to her.
He calls her job. They're like, she doesn't show up anymore. And she didn't take, and he noticed that she was putting on brand new bottle of perfume. Where did she get this?
Picked up her dry cleaning.
The Japanese are very organized people. You know, she couldn't leave that chore undone.
But then Malta, he talks to Malta. He's like, hey, you know, I can't find the cat, and now my wife's gone. And she's like, yeah, the cat's probably never coming back, man. In terms of your wife, you just got to wait, hang out. That's what Mr. Honda told him also. So it's like, I guess I'm in the waiting part.
As Tom Petty tells us, the waiting is the hardest part.
Yes.
You don't know that song?
No, I don't.
Nate, no?
I assume it's called that, though.
Yeah, so you got to just be very nasal when you say it.
The waiting.
You got like Tom Petty here. You have a really bad sinus infection.
Probably from all the cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, while she's gone, he's like waiting around for her. He's having sex dreams about Krita, who is so curious. He looks curiously like Kumiko. And then she's like, this is weird. And he's like, that's fine. Don't worry about it. It's just a dream. And he's like, all right. And he keeps having to wake up and like clean all the old cum off of his sheets. happens several times.
Yeah, he's like, oh, another wet dream. It's like, dude, you're 30. How's that happening still? The fuck?
Well, he got blown by a sex ghost.
Just wake up and jerk off like a gentleman.
And then a little bit later in the book, Krita is like, well, we've already had sex twice. And he's like, wait, what? And it's like, just like we did in your dream. And then she says, I used to be a prostitute. Now I'm a prostitute of the mind. It's like,
I thought that's what teachers were.
Yeah, she did. She entered his dreams to bang him because she's a dream girl. Anyway,
oh, it's a dream lover. Come rescue me.
She's like, you're gonna love me. Actually, she never says that. She's like, I don't care. But then Kumiko's parents call and they're like, hey, she left you. She found someone new. You suck. Just give us the divorce and let's all move on from this. And he's like, what the fuck? Let me talk to her. She's like, no, she doesn't want to talk to you and we don't want to talk to her. So just give us divorce and we're all good. And he's like, I'm not going to divorce her until I talk to her at least. And they're like, how about you suck our dick? And he's like, no, thank you. And so he has to spend more time waiting.
Is this also when he finds out? He's like, oh, she's been cheating on you. She's been having a
They tell her that she's found someone else, but he doesn't know the details. He's like,
she
what do you mean?
She sends him a very long letter.
Eventually.
That says, I found another man, and I ran away with him.
She really doesn't let him down easy in that letter, man. It's brutal.
Yeah.
But then he also doesn't believe it. He's like, I don't quite believe this.
Because it's so out of character for her to just disappear and then be like, by the way, I've been banging someone else furiously, and it was awesome. She's like, this doesn't sound like her, because it doesn't. And so he's like, I have to at least talk to her. Let's see what's
she's
up.
Like, you don't understand. It was just so much better. Oh, come on. I always do that. She's like, no, it was crazy. Fucking like Hiroshima, this shit was.
But like
just,
in a good way.
A good Hiroshima. His mushroom was releasing a cloud of spunk. And he just keeps reading it. He reads it like three times. He's like, oh, come on, really? This is not. Why'd you have to. The balls, too? Like, she's going into all the things. She's like, I was doing things I wouldn't do with you. He's like, oh, why do you say it? Why are you telling me this? And then, surprisingly, he doesn't kill himself, though he kind of wants to by sitting in the bottom of a well.
Yeah. Instead, he just goes to the well at the abandoned house, goes down it, and just sits there.
We should have said Lieutenant Mumia, or whatever, when he, after witnessing the man get skinned alive in Mongolia, and knowing he won't die, or he doesn't realize it right away, but he won't die in Asia on the continent, the Mongolians throw him in a well, a
dry well.
They
give
the
option of being shot in the head or jumping into a well. And he's like, well, I guess I'll take the well.
Yeah. Well, let me think about it. And he jumps down the well.
At least I have a shot that way. No, wait, no.
So he takes the plunge, and then he takes a couple days a day or two till Honda finds him. So this is something floating around in Toru's mind. Why? I don't fucking know, but it happens in the book. And so he's like, I'm going to go sit at the bottom of the well and think.
And he stays down there for a couple of days. And after like 2 days, he like wakes up, I don't know, middle of the night or something, and I realize there's no ladder, so he had put a ladder to, you know, he had brought a ladder, put a ladder down the well so he could climb down the well and not just like jump. But he wakes up and the ladder's gone.
Well, he had been talking to May. She's like, what are you doing in the well? He's like, just sitting and thinking. She's like, oh, that's weird, man. Okay. And then she blocks up the top of the well. So she's like, you probably think better in the dark, bitch.
And she's also like, nobody knows you're here except for me. You could die down there.
That's menacing.
If I didn't tell anyone or bring you a ladder. And he's like, not that concerned. He's like, yeah, that's true, but not that concerned.
Yeah, he never panics. He's like, all right, you got, that's true.
Yeah.
Now, did I mention when he first meets her? This is like one of the few things I highlighted in the book. Do you remember what she said when she's like, who are you? And he's, because she calls him Mr. Wind-Up Bird, which we should talk about why that's there. Or actually, you guys should talk about it and explain it to me, is what I mean.
I remember the passage. I have no idea what it means or what he was saying.
But there's when he first meets her, she says, quote, "And your whistling's terrible. I don't know the tune, but it had no melody at all." And I'm not leaving any, I'm not, the next sentence, "You're not gay, are you?" It's like, maybe that's an oddly translated thing that in Japan, gay men can't whistle. I don't know. But she says, "You're not gay, are you?" He's like, "Probably not," is what he says. "Probably not." Why?
You never know.
And she said, "Somebody told me gays are lousy whistlers." Is that true? Like, who the fuck knows?
It was the 80s.
It was like if you have like the piercing in the wrong ear.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah. That was science when we were kids.
Still is. I won't put any in that ear just in case.
I will put dicks in that ear, like, but not a ring.
No. It's like hanging the wrong color bandana out of your back pocket.
Oh, I have to get my bandana collection sorted.
People think you're cruising. So, Jimmy, Nate and I were, Jimmy left to masturbate because he was thinking about the man being skinned alive.
I was thinking about the well.
Yeah. The wind-up bird. The fuck is that?
The wind-up bird is, he hears this weird bird every morning, and he doesn't know what the fuck it is because he's not a bird doctor. And it's just this weird sounding.
Not a bird man.
Yeah, it's like an inside joke he has with his wife. He's like, "Oh, that's the wind up bird. It's winding up the day or the season to change or some shit like that." And throughout the book, the bird doesn't appear because no one ever sees it. They just hear it. But the bird appears whenever weird shit's about to happen, which is in this book all the time.
Every page.
Yeah.
Okay, but. Because, I mean, it's in the title of the book.
It is the title of the book.
Well, the word chronicle is also there.
Well, the bird exists throughout time and space.
I mean, I was trying to... I mean, a chronicle is just like a list of things that happen. It's not necessarily a story.
It's the Wind-Up Bird Chronicles of Narnia.
Yes. Actually, it's the Wind-Up Bird Chronic by Dr. Dre. It's the
Wind-Up.
The Chronic.
T-H-A yeah. Bird. Wind-Up Bird, yeah.
Yeah. Parentheses, forgot about Dre.
Dre was the only thing not in this book.
You know what? Go back again. Check it. You know, I'm not sure.
Read it again, Jimmy. Read it closer.
He was one of the Mongolians.
Drengus. It could have been in there. Okay.
When did Straight Outta Compton come out? Was it 1984?
Before this. This book came out, what, 97?
But I mean, this takes place in 1984.
Straight Outta Compton is that 1989?
Ooh, okay, so this has happened around the time of Dr. Dre's Bar Mitzvah then.
Okay, I'm looking it up. Straight Outta Compton, 1988. Damn you, autism, you failed me.
So he gets, eventually the ladder shows back up and he gets out and it was Kreta. Did we do that? I forget. Oh.
So he gets out and then he goes.
Someone puts the
like,
ladder back down.
No, doesn't Kreta Kano rescue him?
Yeah, I mean, he assumes it was her.
He assumes or it was?
I think he assumes it was, or she talks to him while she's down there. I forget. It doesn't matter. It's magic.
I think she shows up and rescues. Okay, what I remember is she shows up and rescues him. Am I sure about that?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, it is. Because she puts the ladder down there, and by the time he gets up, she's gone. He's like, why would you just leave at that point? That's a real weird thing to do.
Who
and then he goes,
cano?
Have you read the book I'm in? And then...
is she the character that's... No. It is Kreta Kano who says... She says the sentence, this story will be about more than the disappearance of a cat.
And somewhere
she
someone
wasn't
in the
wrong.
Book says, this isn't just a weird novel.
Yeah, it does.
It's like, oh, that's funny because this is just a weird novel. Okay, then there's this thing with cinnamon and nutmeg.
They don't show up until
people?
Book three.
We're not at that point yet.
We're about there, though. Yeah. Basically, I think the only thing left that happens in book two is that he... does he actually have real-life sex with Kreta Kano?
Yeah, she comes to stay with him because...
And she's like, I don't know how I got here.
She's like wearing her clothes. Yeah, he wakes up in bed. And she's in bed naked. She's like, what? He's like, what the fuck? And then she comes out of bed later and she's like, I don't remember cutting here, but I'm here and I don't have any clothes. It's like, whoa, you know, you got to stop sniffing glue. And so she just starts wearing Kumiko's clothes. And she's like, hey, I'm done with all this magic assistant stuff. So I'm just going to like go away to Crete and just start over. Would you like to come with me? And he's like, I think I got to figure out about my wife first, but let me think about it. He's like, you want to bang in the meantime? And he's like, yeah, I guess, sure.
Well, he's like, I don't think so. And she's like, well, we already did in your mind. And this is when he's like, oh, right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Then yes.
Yeah.
Because there is a weird, he like notices her naked and he's like, nice titties. Literally, that's the description. She had nice boobs and I saw her pubes.
I gave her a thumbs up and said, pretty cool.
Looks ripe. She's like, ew, dude. That didn't happen. She thought it. Then they have sex. Does that matter? I don't know. But then it's book three, which was called...
Well, but before it gets to book three, he has to go sit around and think about stuff. And so he's out there sitting in like the plaza. They're like, go out and like look at people and try and figure your shit out. And he's like, all right, I'll just have something to do. Because he's still unemployed. He's still not doing anything. He's just laying around. Like, you got to go do something to get reconnected with this world. You're losing touch with reality. Sitting in the bottom of a well like a weirdo. So he goes to sit in the plaza and just watches people for hours and hours and hours at a time. And a weird lady comes up to him and is like, hey, are you broke? Oh, also, when he got out of the well, he shaved. Oh, and he had a weird bruise on his face, like a weird blue mark, like a birthmark, some kind of magic thing. He's like, that's weird.
Like astral projected in the well. He had like a weird dream where
he went to the hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes into a magic hotel, either in his mind or in another dimension. We don't know. And he never will. And so this lady sees him sitting there. And he's like, hey, by the way, are you broke? And he's like, no, I'm not. And she's like, oh, well, I'll try again later. And you're like, that's weird. And then he's sitting around and he sees this guitar guy and he's like, I know that guy. And there's a flashback earlier in the book where he was out of town on business. And at the time, Kumiko was pregnant. And she's like, I don't know if I want to keep it. I don't know what I want to do. And he's like, well, you know, it's your decision. It's your kid. You know, you're the one who got to do the baby thing. And then,
so even though we've always been careful, we must have just been careless once.
It could be. You never know. And so he's out of town on business, and he's at this cafe place, and sees a guitarist. And this is the night that Kumiko calls him and said, I had the abortion. Sorry, you were gone. But I just thought, like, now's the time. Bye. And he's like, oh, okay, cool, thanks. And he's a guitarist, and he's like, oh, he does a bunch of weird songs and does some weird stuff with burning his hand or faking burning his hand. Oh, it's about empathy. I don't know. It was some weird shit. Performance art. And so he sees the guy at this modern point in his life, and he's like, I'm going to follow him because I'm a weirdo. And he follows the guy, and he gets, you know, gets into the guy's building, and the guy's like, what the fuck? And jumps him with a bat. And so Toru fights him, takes the bat, and beats the fuck out of him, and then leaves. And that's the end of book two. And you're like, I don't know where this is going. I didn't before, but I still don't.
And this is actually halfway through the book.
Oh, he gets the letter from Kumiko after he gets out of the well.
Sure, man.
Yeah.
Whatever you say. Okay, so part three. There's a random lady who he met while he was people watching says, hey, I'm weird. You want a job? And she has this thing where she has kind of like a, it's almost like a stylist for celebrities in Japan, but it's all very secret. And, you know, nobody can know that she's actually helping people with their style. But yet, his job is to wait around at hotels and meet the people. Don't exactly understand what that was.
She says, I got a job for you. And he brings her, she brings him to her studio, puts him in a room. And at the place is a mute kid. He's not a kid. He's probably like 20, 21, 23. I don't know. Early 20s. And it looks, and it's probably her son, and it is her son. And he doesn't, he's mute. He doesn't make any sounds. But you can kind of understand what he's saying just because he's good at signals. And then he brings him to the quote-unquote fitting room. And he's like, just do whatever happens in there. Just go along with it. And they put it like, I think they put a blindfold on him. Or they put goggles on him that have been blacked out so we can't see what's going on. Sit him on a sofa, and someone comes into the room. He can tell it's a lady somehow. And she just starts licking the weird mark on his face. And he's like, I guess I can get into this. And then when it's all done, he cleans off his pants, which have been cummed in, of course, because they licked his cheek real good.
Not and the weirdest like, Japanese thing I've seen.
Yeah, honestly, this is pretty pedestrian. And they give him a fuckload of money.
PG. It's like the Kidz Bop of Japanese porn.
I don't want to ever hear the phrase the Kidz Bop of Japanese porn ever again.
Well, what if that's going to be the name of my band?
You're going to get put on a list. But they give him like 100,000 yen, which I don't know what that
is. It's like nothing. No, you just, you move.
But it's 100,000 yen in 1984.
Treat a yen like a penny. That's really what you have to do. That's like the easy like ballpark figure.
But then in 1984, it was worth a billion times more. So it's
I don't think that's true.
It's a lot of money. It's what he would make in a month when he was working as a paralegal. Or whatever the Japanese version of paralegal is.
He was like a delivery boy.
Yeah, he was just like some guy at the law firm doing whatever.
Because they couldn't trust fax machines yet.
And fax machines were Western devils.
I'm sure they were made in Japan, actually.
Yeah, it sounds possibly like a Japanese invention.
But he's like, all right, well, I mean, a lady's going to lick my cheek and I make a lot of money. Like, I could do this. And he's like, I want to buy that house. Someone has torn it down. Someone has bought the land and tore it down. They're trying to sell it, but no one wants to buy it because it is cursed. Because everyone that lived there lost everything or killed themselves or killed their families because it's cursed. And he's like, I guess I'll go see if I can buy it. Like, yeah, you can probably buy it like one day. It's expensive right now. Not that expensive for what it should be. But eventually they'll probably settle for selling it for anything because like no one's going to buy this shit. It's going to take a while though. And he's like, all right, well, let me know. And then there's like a time jump and he's been getting his face licked for a while by these people. And this mother and son who called, she doesn't want them to know her real name. She goes by Nutmeg and her son is Cinnamon. And you know, she takes him out, gets him nice clothes, gets his face licked, pays him a lot of money. They build a house on the property to use for the face licking. Meanwhile, she's telling him all about her life growing up because her father was the veterinarian at the Manchukuo Zoo, which was basically Nanking, pretty much, like on the mainland or something like that, right?
Manchukuo was the puppet state Japan made in Manchuria when they took it over in 1937. Manchuria.
Yeah.
They renamed it and they're like, let's change it a lot. Was it there early? 31?
1931. It was in 1937 that they used a fake crisis on the border. Japan used a fake crisis on the border between Manchuria and mainland Japan and the rest of Japan to just start invading Japan. Starting invading China. I mean,
which something with a railroad, right?
It was not a real event. It was a very like contrived, manufactured, like diplomatic faux pas. But they're like, "Fuck you, we're invading now," because that's what diplomacy was at that time.
And it worked Japan in World
was
War I.
Big dick back then.
Yeah.
This was Imperial Japan, who were still hated to this day because of everything they did back then.
Which I thought that was going to be, I thought maybe that's the point of the book.
It is definitely part of this book.
That like everyone's just kind of like, let's just move on from that.
Yeah,
shit.
That's definitely a big part of it. But she tells him, oh, you know, my dad, he was the veterinarian at the zoo. And I remember the time that he had to exterminate all the animals because they were pulling out of Manchukuo. Because
that's what they called Chinese people.
Yeah, well, they did exterminate a lot of the Chinese there, too, after they had them, like, bury the animals. It's like, stab these Chinese people because the bullets are no good, are too valuable to use on them. And, like, throw them into mass graves and shit like that. It was pretty fucked up.
To put it very mildly, yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, she and her mother fled. Like, he got them. He got them on the like the boats out before you know, they were overrun or something. I don't know. I don't actually know what happened. Eventually, they were overrun. She remembers like being on the boat there and almost getting sunk by a. Almost getting sunk by an American submarine. Who then, at the last minute, says, "Oh, you can go. It's all right. Your country just surrendered because we just got nuked twice." And meanwhile, he's getting his face licked and living it up. And he's still hearing from Kumiko's family. And they're like, "You got to give us his divorce, man. We'll give you anything. Like, just want to talk to her." And they're like, "No." And he's like, "I gotta." And then he goes to meet with Malta, and Noboru is there. And he's like, "You have to give my sister this divorce, and let's all move the fuck on, because I'm gonna, his uncle has died, and he's gonna take over his seat in the diet and lose a lot of weight. And then he's going to, you know, he can't have this scandal of his, like, weird things that are going on, and his sister being, you know, not divorced properly or some shit, you know, just, you know, saving face. And then Toru's like, "She told me your fucking weird secret, man." Even though she didn't.
Yeah. He bluffs, yeah. And this happened and much earlier in the book.
Well, she told him about the smell in the sister's underwear stuff. But clearly something else going on, something even weirder and worse.
This is when he has like tea with Noboru and Malta. Malta.
Yeah.
And Noboru is a fucking cunt. He's just like, "I'm important. This is a waste of my time."
Yes.
And he's like, "Shut the fuck up with your styled hair, you asshole."
And he's like, "She told me your secret," even though she didn't tell him, like, whatever the secret is that Noboru is thinking of. But Noboru is like, "He knows my magic evil secret." And he's like, "Well, no one likes you." And he, like, leaves. And
do you remember, by the way, I just remembered it, the field of economics that he invented?
Oh, God, what was it?
Excretory economics?
Oh, yeah.
It's literal bullshit.
Yeah, it's fucking stupid. Just like regular economics. And then after a while, he comes home
then
from the...
Then they talk through the computer.
They talk through the computer, but that's...
Very early internet.
That's after he gets
home... From a listserv?
It's probably, it's like a IRC. I don't even know.
Oh my god!
He comes home from getting his face licked, and there's a weird frumpy guy in his house. He's like, "Hey, I'm Ushikawa. I do all the dirty work for Noboru. Sorry about like breaking in and all that jazz, but like you need to do this divorce thing." And he's like, "You gotta let me talk to her." He's like, I'm just a messenger. I have no power here. I'm just doing what I'm told. That is my place. Also, I got so drunk I beat my wife until my kids left. But, you know, that's just the kind of guy I am. I suck." And he's like, "Okay, that's a lot of information. Thanks." He's like, "Okay, here's the deal. If I can get you to talk to Kumiko somehow, then, you know, we'll move forward a little bit." And he's like, "Yeah, okay, fine." And so he's like, "You can use the computer that Cinnamon has in the house," or like the guy has, because, you know, he knows there's a computer there. It's like, "I could use a computer.
Commodore 64.
Yeah. It's probably like Commodore 8.
Nate, what would be the number?
I think it would, even in 1984, it would have still been Commodore 64. Now I'm looking it up, though, because this is important. And I didn't understand anything else, so...
like a drowning man, I'll grab anything I could cling on to, anything concrete.
It came out, Commodore 64 came out in 1982, and by this time it's like 1985, so.
Except it's Commodore 66 by then.
Probably a Commodore 128 by now.
64 double plus. Ushikawa was like, "I'll give you 80 million yen if you," he's been authorized by Noboru. "I'll give you 80 million yen to leave the house, stop whatever you're doing there, whatever weird shit it is you're up to. And you can have a lot of money." But then Noboru would own it. He wants to buy it. And he's like, "I don't like that guy owning things. And also, he sucks. Also, I fucked his sister. So, ha." So no, you can't do that. And so eventually they talk on the computer and she does talk to him and he asks some questions and proves that it's her. And then, what did you say? There's a million things.
They have like literally a, what would today be a just text conversation? Like I'm just texting you.
Yeah.
But it was 1984. So they had to have it through this like weird computer terminal thing where you have to like set it from send to receive.
Yeah.
Anyway, at now, and it's kind of like even in 1994 when this book came out, that was like a thing most people hadn't done, which is send an email,
yeah,
even in Japan.
So Al this Gore would have been invented
very yet. Futuristic.
Might as well be magic, which the rest of the book is actual magic. So
they're mostly just looking like, how can I get porn out of this?
We will.
Someone
find a
must
way.
Figure that out soon.
The gist of what they talk about is that, like, hey, look, I banged a lot of dudes, sorry, but something is wrong with me, and I'm just fucked up, and I want you to forget about me and move on with your life, because I'm no good. The person you knew is gone and is dead and gone, and you need to move on with your life and just get the fuck over it, because it's not going to work out. And he's like, fuck that, I need to see you. And she's like, no, and then she does the equivalent of hanging up.
She puts the computer on airplane mode.
It's too heavy for an airplane.
And then there's a weird, surreal dream sequence that somehow resolves everything. Couldn't tell you what happens.
He goes back into the well because he's got to go back into find the hotel that he believes holds all the answers. And so he's in there, and he gets transported to the hotel where he's watching TV in the lobby of the hotel, and it says that Noboru has been attacked by someone with a bat. And he's like, that looks like my bat. And also, when he went down there, the bat is gone. So he's like, what the fuck is that? So then the people in the hotel start chasing it, even though it's not real. And he ends up talking to this one guy who calls Mr. No Face. And Mr. No Face is like, I can take you to the room you want to get to. Just stay in there. Don't come out. This is a bad place. You shouldn't be here. You're not supposed to be here. And he goes into the room, and there's a lady in there. And she's like, don't look at me, because he's got a little flashlight. Like, don't look at me. Get us some drinks. And they have their 11,000th glass of Cutty Sark.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it the phone sex lady? You can tell by her voice.
It's the phone sex lady, but it also becomes Kumiko. Kumiko, whatever the fuck. And you can tell by, you know, because it's his wife. You know, she sounds like she changes. Maybe she was always Kumiko. Who knows? And then someone gets into the room, and he fights him with the bat. And the guy stabs him once or twice, or like slashes him. And then he brains the dude. And he's about to see who it is, and Ghost Kumiko is like, don't look at that guy. Trust me. If you look at him, I'm not coming back with you. And then he's like, all right. And then he wakes up, he's back in the well. And it's filling with water, and he's going to drown. But he gets out because someone helps him. Cinnamon? Probably Cinnamon. I forget who. And then it turns out while he was down in the well, he sees in the newspaper that Noboru had a stroke in front of everybody, like a press conference, and he's a vegetable now. And then he gets a letter from Kumiko. He's like, hey, just letting you know, I'm going to go unplug my brother and murder him. And I'm not going to tell anyone why I did it. Cause she told him, like, at some point Noboru did the weird thing to her too. The weird thing he did to Krita, and like pulled a demon out of her or put a demon into her. No one knows. Did some defilement.
It does use the language of childbirth or like,
yeah, it's like there's something in there, and it has been put in or removed, or there was something, he pulled something out, and then there was a new thing, like something new is here, and I don't know what the fuck it is.
And, supply and demand.
Yeah. Economics.
Like, what does this have to do with the Laffer curve?
Manufacturing widgets. And then she's like, all right, gonna go kill my brother. Bye. And then the last chapter is him with May, And she's like, didn't you get all my letters? He's like, I didn't get any fucking letters. What are you talking about, kid? Because there's a bunch of letter chapters that are letters from May, because she's now living in the mountains, like isolated, working at a wig at the wig factory. Just like being alone and making wigs, getting her shit together. And he's like, I didn't get any letters, man. Sorry. She's like, what the fuck? I wrote so many letters. And he's like, all right. Yeah. Then it ends.
And you can't help but think, thank God he didn't include those. This book was too long already.
He did include those.
But like,
we got 4 letters from May.
Okay. So, sure. This is all stuff that happened in a book. There were words. My eyes moved over them. Jimmy, what did it mean? Because I don't know what it meant. I knew reading this, but I knew I didn't get it. I don't know if anyone can, though.
I know what it meant to me, but I read other stuff to see, like, maybe it's not about that. And the gist I got was, like, Murakami writes in such a way that it's, like, weird enough that there's a lot of stuff going on, and there's a lot of themes, and you get a lot of different stuff from it. Like, some people will get one thing from it. Some people will get another thing from it. Some people will get different stuff from it depending on when they read it in their life. If they read it multiple times, it's about different stuff. Like, one guy read it 3 times, and it's about different things to him 10 years apart, which makes sense to me because there's so much going on in here. To me, this was about grief. Like, on a very basic level, the guy lost his wife, and there's a lot of magical, weird shit, but what it fundamentally comes down to is dealing with loss and not having any answers and never getting any answers. There's a lot of other shit in there, but the basic thing for me was that.
I think there had to be something about how in the beginning of the book, he's like driftless. Like, he's just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then he is forced to do things. Like, that has to mean something, but I don't really know what. And I do think World War II is a theme, but like,
I read that this was like people in critics and, you know, literary people had criticized Murakami for like not having any real like hard hitting commentary about political stuff or history in his stuff, even though he had some, but like, not everyone needs that, but he's like, all right, fuck you. And so he put all this in there about Japan's grief, kind of, or just confusion with the things they had done in World War II that they never talk about. Like, there are a lot of stuff in this, like crazy fucked up things that happened to other people or happened to Japanese people in this, but it's also about, you know, Japanese just massacring Chinese people. And just it does not go into the sheer depravity of what Japan did during the war and its inability to cope with that. It's just unsaid. Even today, it's still crazy. Like, they don't really acknowledge that. Like, Germany is like, our bad. We fucked up forever. Like, all the German jokes are okay from now on. It's okay. We fucked up. Sorry. Japan is like, nah, fuck them.
Yeah, you can't go to anywhere in Germany without seeing stuff about the Holocaust.
Yeah, it's like they have, I mean, you know, you can't really make up for it, but they have acknowledged what they did.
They paid reparations.
Yeah. Well, Japan still gets in trouble every year for going to the, you know, memorial for the people who died in World War II that were like the ones doing the genocides and war crimes in China.
Hey, man, don't forget about the war crimes and genocides in Burma.
Oh, yeah. No, everywhere. It's everywhere. But, you know, China's one of
those. Those were when they killed the white POWs. Those are the ones people care about more in the West, frankly.
What was it? The guy who ran Manchukuo was a guy named...
Wasn't it the deposed emperor of China? Didn't they put him in there at one point?
Well, the guy really running
emperor?
Manchukuo
Puyi?
Was a guy named... wow, that's racist, Nate. Lee? Wow.
No, Nate said Ching Chong, which is fucking way worse. It glitched.
No, you mean Emperor Puyi.
The last Ching Emperor, which I know, Jimmy, sounds racist, but it's not.
No, yeah. That's actually the name, you know. Yeah.
The one in like 1911, 1912, who was a kid. He Didn't the Japanese put him in some sort of puppet position in World War II?
I mean, Manchukuo
was like
a,
I've heard that.
It was a puppet state, right? So
probably. Yeah, but I think that that guy who, like, he was like, I want to be emperor of China again. Wow. I think the Japanese put him in a position in World War II. And like, sure, you could be head tax collector or whatever bullshit title they gave him.
Well, the guy who was really running things, or one of the guys running things, was a guy named Nobusuke Kishi or something like that.
In 1934, he was declared emperor of Manchukuo.
Yeah, but underneath this guy, Kishi or Nobusuke, I don't know which one is his first name. But that guy did a lot of horrific things, horrific war crimes. And then when the war was over, they put him in jail for a few years until there was suddenly the CIA was like, there's a little bit too many leftists in Japan. Let's get this guy out of jail and have him start a political party. And they mushed political parties together to fight against any kind of leftist stuff. And that party was the Liberal Democratic Party, which means a different thing there.
Yeah, and that Democrats is, again, huh?
But he became prime minister. And his grandson was Shinzo Abe, the guy who was just assassinated by a homemade shotgun, who was prime minister for most of our lifetimes. But it's basically been the same party.
But can you call him by his name according to President Trump, which is Prime Minister Abe?
Oh God, Prime Minister Abe, yeah. Abe Lincoln, but I'm not going to say it the way he said it. So like the guys running Japan since the end of the war, effectively most of the time has been this one party, which was the party of the guys, not entirely because they merged, but the guys running it were the guys doing Manchukuo and doing war crimes. And they're still running the country. It's the same party. So Japan is
they
really
just
not
lost
dealing
a major election like last weekend.
It's a huge thing as we're recording this. Whenever they lose, it's a big thing because they always win. Like the amount of time they haven't been in power is negligible since the 50s, which is why they still go to the memorial every time.
To be fair, haven't genocided since. They focus on other things like convincing us that Italians are plumbers who kill turtles.
Their genocide is a cultural one.
It's like, that's how they'll get the West. Deteriorate their minds through our Italian stereotypes.
And no one cared. But yeah, so that is Japan's lack of reckoning with its own past. Is that grief? Not as much, but you know, this book's about more than one. It's about a billion things. So that part, the World War II section was not as pertinent to my understanding or what I got out of the book. They were interesting.
There is an interesting line. One of the few things I highlighted that wasn't when I fell asleep on the book, about Mamiya, whatever the guy who
Mamma Mia
World War II. Mamma Mia, yeah, it's Mario. So to me, he said he was certainly a man who knew the civilities. He had survived from an age when such civilities occupied a major portion of daily life. So I think there's something about highlighting the barbarism of like the World War II generation, but the genteel barbarism,
the rules about civility and saving face and, you know, being appropriate despite the rape camps.
What was the euphemism? The comfort woman?
Comfort woman was in Korea, but probably also China, yeah. Because they did this everywhere.
Now, they didn't get everywhere. We stopped them.
And then put them back in power.
Listen, I don't know about Japanese history to know go into all that, but I know that I hear your commie take on everything here, Jimmy. But is that the part of the book? I don't know. Is that the point of the book, I should say? I don't know. Maybe. Probably. Nate, what do you think? Nate is...
So what did the book mean? I have no clue. And while it was okay, my feeling the whole time was, you know, Kafka on the Shore was better. Even though it might have made less sense, if that's even possible.
Oh, but it's possible.
I actually liked it better. though at the same time, maybe because for me it was new, because that was my first Murakami book, I was like, oh, this is interesting and weird, and it's kind of like, oh, and for Wind Up Bird Chronicles, like, oh, this thing again? But no, I actually think Kafka on the Shore was better.
Yeah, I do too.
This wasn't weird enough?
It wasn't weird enough.
Because Kafka on the Shore was weirder.
It was weirder and made less sense, but yet, I don't know. Maybe like it was that just had even more out there.
I don't know. By the end of Kafka on the Shore, I didn't know what the fuck was going on at
the
all.
The idea of Colonel Sanders was a character. Like, the concept of Colonel Sanders.
And Jack Daniels?
Oh, no, it was Johnny Walker.
Johnny Walker, yeah.
There please.
Because he was trying to make a flute out of the souls of cats to control the universe.
To make a portal, yeah.
This was a little bit more grounded.
Yeah,
you know, a little more down to earth for sure. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. What else do you call going to the bottom of a well, Nate?
Yes. Good point.
I mean, like Kafka on the Shore. Like, I couldn't tell you what the fuck that was about. I loved it. I didn't know what the fuck that was. Like this, at least I understood to a certain extent what he was getting at. He was putting some fairy tale spins on it and making weird magic stuff happen too. But it had more of a basic human theme I could understand. And I love this book too. I like Kafka on the Shore more. I think I got more out of this one.
I think I like this more because it was a little bit more real, like a more normal book. Maybe I liked it more because of that.
Kafka, yes, it's not all the way to Norwegian Wood, which is, yeah, I don't know what the fuck that was.
Norwegian Wood was, that was pedestrian doing drugs, by, compared to this, yeah, that's... Like yeah, reading highlights.
On the spectrum.
Can you spot the differences?
Yeah, it was just 300 pages of Goofus and Gallant.
It was 300 pages of let's all not kill ourselves, but then kill ourselves because we're sad. This one is also about being sad, but they don't kill themselves.
Oh, good. Well, they just they don't kill. No. Does anyone commit suicide in this? I don't think so. Just that house of people.
Krita tries to kill herself.
So I read a lot of reviews for this to try to understand what the fuck it was, and fully acknowledging that I didn't get it. They didn't help. They really didn't.
I mean, every review I read was like, this is about something different to everyone. So it's like, it's one of those things where you can get different stuff out of it. Like, I read this book, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember like it was weird, but I don't remember like really getting much out of it. Like I read it this time and I got a lot more out of it.
Well, I thought it was interesting. This is a quote from what the hell is her name? Michiko Kakutani, the New York Times book reviewer for many years. She was like, it was mid. She's like, meh.
Yeah.
And she said it was only intermittently successful. In trying to depict a fragmented, chaotic, and ultimately unknowable world, Murakami has written a fragmentary and chaotic book.
Shallow and pedantic.
Shallow and pedantic, yes. But I thought it was interesting that Kenzaburo Oe, who is like the dean of a Japanese literature, of a Nobel Prize winning writer, this was the book where he was like, okay, Murakami doesn't suck. Because he is like, I don't like him. He's, you know, he's popular, but he's shitty. And then he read this, like, actually, no, he's good. And if you look at the picture of this guy, he looks like the what you picture of as an old Japanese businessman. So, like, this was, an interestingly divisive book, though I think now most people to say, oh, it's a really great book. I just don't really get why.
Some people still hate it. And you know, I get why. It's fucking weird. It's bizarre. But I think there is something in there for everyone. I think there's a lot of stuff in there that I don't care about. But I'm willing to accept that part. It's, you know, it's a matter of just like, I like weird stuff. So like that is already okay for me. But if you don't like weird stuff that maybe you won't get. Some people hate when there aren't answers, and that's reasonable. You know, like, oh, well, I'm never going to know. And to me, yeah, generally that is, I don't like it. I think in terms of this one, it works because part of grief and loss is that you don't get answers. You just got to move the fuck on. It's not going to work out in a nice, tidy bow. That's part of it. You'll never know. You will never know, and you have to move on. Grow up. Shit sucks.
Just go get your face licked.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there are worse things, certainly. I mean, honestly, don't we all sell our bodies for money?
I'm not sure.
When we were working remotely, we still had to use our bodies. So,
in the loosest sense possible, sure.
Well, I don't know how loose you are, Michael.
Well, if I was less loose, I could sell it for more money. Sad thing. Nate, anything you want to add?
Would you recommend this to anyone?
I have recommended Kafka on the Shore to a couple people. I don't just think as a any mind of them fuck. Have. No one has taken me up on that.
It's hard to recommend really, really long books.
It's true. It's very long. It's very strange. Doesn't make any sense. You should read it. That just, people don't usually go for that.
Yeah, if it's like 30 pages and you're like, yo, it's, I don't know what the fuck happened. It's a mind fuck. They'd be like, okay, I'll check it out. But it's like, this will take up 3 weeks of your life. It's like, oh, maybe not.
So, Jimmy, don't you fucking dare try to make us read 1Q84.
Oh, that's on the list, baby.
I hate you so much. It's like 50% longer than this, right?
That's my Mount Everest at this point of my life.
Have you read it, or are you?
No, I've read a few others of his books, like a few short ones, and one of his book of short stories. But I haven't read IQ84, which it's supposed to be very, very good, but also over the top bizarre and twice as long.
It's a pun, the title, because Q means 9 in Japanese. That's all I'm going to get out of the book, and I don't even have to fucking read it.
Is it 1Q or IQ?
I think it's written as 1984. I think they're numbers, but there's a Q. But
no, I thought it was like IQ, but I don't fucking
maybe
know.
Maybe it's that too. Maybe it's another pun both. That I didn't have a high enough IQ to get. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no fucking idea. But I liked it, weird. And I don't expect anyone else to do so. But I'm okay with that.
If this is a book that if you were in a class... I wouldn't mind someone telling me what the fuck was going on.
I read like a lot of interpretations of the book. It was like, what was the hotel? What was it? And it was like, oh, well, the hotel is his subconscious mind. And the well is where he goes to meditate and enter his subconscious mind and where he fights his fears and his, subconscious beliefs about the world. And someone else was like, I think that the hotel was where, Noboru was extracting these weird creatures from that dimension and putting them into a place, and that place was the hotel. And so everyone in there was something he'd extracted, and that's why Toru wasn't supposed to be there. Those were his monsters, and Mr. No Face was like, oh, someone said, oh, that's Cinnamon, because in the real world he can't talk, but there he talks, but he has no face, so you can't tell what he's trying to say with his face like he normally does. Someone else was like, no, Mr. No Face is Mr. Honda. Because he's always got a bottle of Cutty Sark ready for you. And the thing that Mr. Honda left Toru in the real world was an empty box. Like, what the fuck is this box? Like, that box was a Cutty Sark box. But the bottle is in the other dimension. And you're like, any of these things could be true. Any of it could be true. And none of it could be true. It's whatever you want to think of it. Whatever you put into it, you get something else out of it. So I think it's open to interpretation. I don't think anyone's right or wrong necessarily. And maybe that some people hate that. Some people think that's fucking lazy. And some people are like, no, I want a book about one thing. And we've certainly done a lot of books where like I did not get the point at all. And I didn't like it.
Yeah, at least this one tell us so.
Yeah, yeah. Like what did they say about A Farewell to Arms? Was unthoughtful. Was like, yeah, you know, whatever. Like, I did plenty of thinking in this book, and someone who does just as much thinking would come up with completely different answers. And I think that's okay, because much like this book is, you can read any book at different points in your life and get different stuff out of it. This one you could read next week and get different stuff out of it. So whatever you want to do. So I'm okay with that. I loved it. I liked it better this time than last time.
If I had to read this a second time, I'd be fucking angry. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, on my list next year, it's going to be this one again. What did it mean this time?
You know, I had an idea today that's for a punishment book that I was like, that's too ridiculous. Is a few years ago, the New Yorker put out The Complete New Yorker, like a century. Oh my
God.
It's like 10 million pages.
Oh, I want to know what this fucking editorial about the teapot dome scandal. How timely.
It's like, derbies, will they never not be in style? Yeah, read the Tammany Hall poet, read a Tammany Hall cartoon. Talk of the town. I hear everything you just said, Jimmy. It sounds very nice the way you say it. It didn't take me 607 pages to hear that. I guess I'm just one of the more concrete people that prefer something solid to hold on to in the book, but that is not Murakami.
I think there's room for both.
It's just his. I had this thought reading it. I'm glad this guy became a writer because this is like mostly shit coming out of his subconscious. And if he didn't become a writer, he'd be fucking just strangling and murdering women.
Well, it said he was he owned a jazz bar, and then quit when he was 30 to become a writer.
You know what? I'm glad because jazz is terrible. I'm glad he stopped that too. But like this is a man whose mind is fucking warped.
He's a weird dude.
So I'm glad he's channeling it into something productive and not just, you know, collecting scalps and, you know, pubic bones for people.
Do people have pubic bones?
Pelvic? I don't know. Maybe they just like scalps.
I guess the pubis is like the hips, inside hips. I'm thinking of penile bones. Like when you go to like that. You ever been to that store, Evolution, downtown? You can buy a raccoon's penis bone and a tube.
Bear penis bone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know anything about them. Just heard about them.
Speaking of penis bones, what do you think?
We have a Patreon. Can we stop this? Can we be done with this now? This is terrible.
Are you ever really done with anything?
I fucking suck my dick, Jimmy.
Suck it well? I'm going to do a bad job.
Like your mom does. Oh my God.
Poorly.
Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Or follow us on X and all those, you know, Drunk Guys BC.
And the Facebook and Instagram at the Book Club of the Drunk Guys, but the other way around. And Goodreads, where, well, why not? Well.
Yeah. And the Patreon, mentioned that. But you're not listening now.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.